welcome to the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs. You are here. Hello, my friends. How are you today? This is Nicole, and you have reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. So happy to be here with you today. So today we are back in this limited series that we have within this podcast called Real Time Heal. And what that means, if you haven't heard a Real Time Heal before, is that I get on the podcast with a person willing to share their story, kind of tell us where they have been and how far they've come and give us some details. And then we move into the Real Time Heal segment where they tell me where they're struggling and we can maybe get a little personal and we find our way to helping them unstick where they're stuck and get where they need to go in terms of their healing. I've done many of them on the podcast before. They're always really moving and impactful, and today is no exception. So today we have on the podcast Katie. Katie is a member of my membership community, and she talks about it a lot in our conversation. So I figured it probably would be instructive for me to open up and share a little bit with you what she's referring to. So about 6-8 months ago, maybe 8 months ago, Lisa and I started something called the Journal Speak Nicole Sachs Membership Community. And what that means is that obviously there's not enough time in the world for me to answer every question I get via text and email and DM and on my larger unpaid membership community, which is Journal Speak with Nicole Sachs, which is many, many, many thousands of people on Facebook. So what Lisa and I created was something called the membership community, where it's a small group. We are interacting on a daily basis. I'm answering everyone's questions. And then twice a month, I am with you live. We do 1 3-hour Zoom a month where we're together and I teach a lesson and Lisa is there and we are interacting and answering questions in the group. Is interacting with each other, creating community, incredibly powerful stuff. And one live Q&A where we just hop on and I am just totally freeform answering your questions and we spend time together. And they're both recorded. So no matter what time zone you're in, you can hear the recordings. Some people who aren't able to make it in terms of time zones, mostly people in Australia and Asia, they come to the membership online on our daily Facebook community, which is a private group, only members of the community see your posts and see my answers. And then they watch the recordings because that's the best way to get that kind of intimate information. So that's what she's talking about. If you are interested in being part of this, I wish there was more of me to go around, but this is the way to really get personal attention. I will know you. I will know your face. I will know your name. I will answer your questions and you'll get to, you know, the kind of guidance that a lot of people are asking me for. So you go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, scroll down a tiny bit because it is just on the bottom of your screen. You'll see the place to sign up for the membership community. It's $99 a month and, you know, it far exceeds the value of, the many therapy sessions and online lessons and Zooms that you get. So I really think it's a great deal and people are really responding beautifully to it. So having said that, I wanted to explain what she's talking about. Katie came into the membership community at the very beginning. She has come so far. She is such a wonderful active member, just providing so much great energy and feedback, asking great questions and answering other people's questions. And that's kind of the way that we really accelerate our healing, is not only by asking questions, but by being of service to others, answering other people's questions. There's always somebody a little further back on their journey than you are that you can reach your hand back and help them. And it's really an exponential help to your own healing. So if you're a new person coming into this work, and you're really confused as to where to begin, that's a really great place to start, is joining the community and not only being of a person who can ask any question of me and of the others in the group, helping others. It's really, really powerful work. So Katie is an incredible member of our community, and she said something on our Zoom last month, which really perked my ears up and led me to invite her on for a real-time heal. And what she said was, when I think about being fully recovered, and her right now her symptom imperative is migraines, but she's been through the gamut, which you're going to hear on this conversation. She said, when I really think about being completely well. I am fearful. I'm scared of myself. I am scared that I will go back to all of those behaviors that lacked self-care, the overworking, the overshowing up for people, the lack of boundaries. This is such a real fear for people and one that can really get in the way of that final step toward pain cessation. Katie's come a long way and she has more to go, and she knows that this could be a barrier for her. So I said, Katie, come on the podcast. Let's talk about this on A Real Time Heal. And she was overjoyed to do so. And we had a really, really incredible, emotional, productive conversation that I'm going to share with you here today. So I won't say much more about it. Just wanted to give you a little intro to that and to remind you that if you need more support, other ways to get support, just go over to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Come over to my Instagram at NicoleSachsLCSW. New information on both of those places all the time. And on my website, you can find all the free resources in terms of how to journal speak, you know, frequently asked questions. And if you need more support, you could either join the membership community or you can take some of the courses I offer. I offer Freedom from Chronic Pain. I offer Freedom from an Anxious Life. And I offer many recorded sessions that have been done on different topics under retreat recordings. And so just click the retreats tab and you'll see all of those. I'm here to help you. And there's nothing more important to me than spreading this message far and wide and helping as many people as possible. So here we are. All right, my loves, I hope this finds you well. Enjoy this inspiring real-time heal with Katie. Hi, everyone. Today I'm here with Katie. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you, Nicole.
I am so psyched to have Katie here today. So just a tiny bit of background. Katie is a member of my online membership community, the one I do with Lisa, that we meet with everybody twice a month on Zoom and every day on our private community online. And so I've gotten to know Katie really well and love her energy, love her journey and her message and her healing. However, on our last month's Zoom call, something came up that I found fascinating about Katie's struggle in reaching 100% wellness. And so I said, you know what, Katie, I feel like this is like a real-time heal. And she's like, absolutely. So without revealing too much, I'm going to hand the baton over to Katie and let her tell us some of her story. And then we're going to get into a real-time heal that really delves into some complex topics around TMS healing and allows us to delve deeper for everyone listening. So Katie, I'm going to give it to you. Take it away.
Okay. Thank you, Nicole. And feel free to I'll tell mine at whatever level, but I'm pretty open. I can talk about whatever.
Awesome.
So to have a little summary of, I guess, my life, but I'll go into more stuff that was heavy the last couple of years. But I was a TMS kid, chronic everything, you name it, sinus infections, rashes, allergies, daily headaches, GI issues, IBS, lasting infections. I had C. diff when I was in eighth grade and like missed the whole school year from a staph infection.
Yeah.
And then that just went on. And then when that was done, I had chronic UTIs and yeast infections, chronic fatigue, chronic constipation. One time they prescribed me the colonoscopy cleanout regimen and I still like nothing happened.
Wow.
Like, so very constipated.
You were really locked up.
locked up. And another big one is that I had TMJ and what's called idiopathic condylar absorption, which means when I was 11, my jawbones were already like fully degraded from grinding my teeth, and they were, I had a lot of pain, and I ended up having a double jaw surgery when I was 16 to realign my jaw. And so I have some trauma around that, but that's not the lowest of lows. I, through this time, was like a star student. There was alcoholism at home and within a lot of my family. And so I found safety in school and with teachers and with friends. And I felt safe there. I knew how to get A's. I knew what the response would be. And I think on some level, what you've talked about in some of your podcasts, like when you were sick at home, the parents took more care of you and you got more attention and you felt that love and it felt safer. So definitely in that sort of thing. But I'm the oldest of three girls and I was parentified very early. I was definitely treated as the oldest and the responsible one and with all the alcoholism and stuff. And so I felt a lot like if I didn't do what was needed to be done, everything would fall apart and everything was my fault. And so that I feel
lots
responsible
of pressure
for everything. Yeah.
Yes.
Not just within, but within keeping everyone happy and within everything falling apart. So the stakes felt really high. But I got through this time in a way where no one on the outside knew anything was wrong.
Wow. And that's also tremendous pressure, hiding all of those, that physical discomfort, and then still being a star student. That's a lot.
Yeah. And it was also, none of this was spoken about inside our home either. It was the elephant in the room. Like, it was just, everything's fine. We work hard. We have what we need money-wise. And so, like, what's to complain about? So I graduated high school, like, top of my class. I got a full ride to college, achieving my dreams. I got into, for grad school, so I'm doing my PhD in genetics. I'm in my last year now, but 5 years ago when I was applying, I got into Harvard, MIT, Stanford. I was getting into everywhere I wanted, achieving my dreams of, like, my whole life. And I was miserable and going through a really tough breakup, and my sister was hospitalized for OCD and that sort of thing. And I finally at that point started therapy.
I just want to say, your story is so striking, and it just reminds me to say to everyone out there, never compare your insides to somebody else's outsides, because all we do in our society is create angst and drama for ourselves by looking at other people and saying, they've got it all together and I'm a mess. And Katie being so lovely and generous with her story, I mean, anybody who saw your story from the outside, oh my goodness, high achiever, beautiful girl. Obviously, even if you're going through a breakup, you had a relationship, and then you get into all of these top schools. I would imagine that if other people did not pause, they could say, that person's life is perfect, mine sucks. And so just a message, just like an unrelated but related moment to say, don't do that to yourself, whomever you are.
Yeah. Yes. And I'm painting it that way kind of on purpose, because that's with my healing journey. So that was now like 5 years ago. And so I started therapy, was starting to go through a lot of my trauma, felt like I was doing better. And then the perfect storm hit. And this is what leads to like the darkest of darks. So this was fall 2020. And kind of the perfect storm of three things happened. So within a week. So on Sunday, my childhood dog died unexpectedly. Her name was Badger. She looked just like Blue Dog. And I think I posted about that way early on in the membership community.
Yes.
And at that point, I was practicing setting boundaries with my family, not controlling everything, working, like making some progress in therapy on really understanding, like, wow, the awareness part. And so the night before, when she had a stomach ache and my family called me, I said, I'm not the mom. And by morning, she was dead.
Wow. Okay. That's trauma.
And so that really gave a lot of fodder for my brain. And I was then diagnosed with like OCD around just like this night of feeling like I killed my dog. And it really just brought me to the floor. And that paired with these other things. So I found out she died at 9 a.m. And at 10 a.m., my partner has been driving across the country for days to come move in with me.
Wow.
On a really exciting day, and he's an hour away.
Yeah.
And I'm just feeling like everything is
falling apart.
And I was just so dumb, or like not dumb, numb, but in a different world on that day. And then 5 days later, I was riding my bike slowly. I'm not a fast biker, had my helmet on, fell off, mild, medium concussion. And then over the next 6 months, spiraled to daily migraine attacks.
Okay. So your body was ready to protect you in some fashion.
Yeah.
And all it needed was a door, and that head injury was the door.
Yep. Yeah. I could power, the TMJ was horrible. I could power through. The UTI is horrible. I could power through. And the migraines were really scary. And the concussion was really scary, and kept me fully in bed. And and so it was right off the bat, I knew it wasn't like, oh, I have a horrible concussion and a horror, like it was mild to medium. I didn't black out. I never lost consciousness. I had intense pain quickly and it stayed and grew. But doctors were like, yeah, a few weeks and then you'll be back. And then at that point, I knew something was going on, but I didn't quite pair it with this mind body work or TMS or any of that yet.
Rarely do people pair it. And to be honest
Exactly.
with you, when you have something as terrifying as a head injury, it's really natural for you to be like really giving away your power. And in a way that there's no shame, zero. Of course, you're going to say to a doctor, oh my goodness, like tell me what to do and I'll do it, or accept, you know, whatever is happening. So that makes sense.
Yeah, so then 6 months later, I finally see a neurologist because of waitlist and everything. And in that time, trying to grieve my dog, trying to move in with my partner, couldn't really feel anything. Like the numbness was so strong, right? And I was like, I've ignored, and my whole life was fake it till you make it, don't feel emotions, right? And so this dog dying, I knew that I needed to feel this, and I knew it was bringing up other things. And at the same time, I was just numb and scared and shut down. And then in pain. And so it really, for 6 months, just the pain escalated. I was still getting my bare minimum work done in my PhD, but to do that and not showing up well in my relationship. And so anyway, I got diagnosed with like anxiety and depression, OCD, and I was spending hours a day ruminating about my dog's death and trying to convince myself, like, am I a good or bad person? Did I kill her? My brain is like, this is what happens when you try to set boundaries and leave your family. Like, your
Yes.
dog dies, your place of safety is gone now, and it's all your fault, right?
Wow,
Is the messaging that I was
that's a
getting.
lot to put on yourself, but I'm not going to argue with it because I know that that's what people do and I know that's where the brain goes.
And so then meanwhile, I'm trying all the migraine medicines. I'm getting by with bare minimum scraping of everything, but I'm like the depression's worsening. Like I'm starting to feel a lot more hopeless because it's like I'm pushing myself as a student still. I'm trying to show up in my relationship. I'm trying to heal this trauma. I have head pain every day, and half the days I have to be in bed for most of the day. And I'm like working in the dark, like on my
Yeah.
PhD at points. And I got more and more bedbound over the year or two, like there was just a lot of hopelessness that sunk in, and I couldn't do much. I lost a lot of, like, not lost friendships, but the I couldn't communicate with a lot
There's
of my
only so
friends because
much
I had no
energy
energy.
you
There's,
have. Yeah.
yeah. And so at this point, I was desperately looking through appointment notes from Stanford, and I had found, like, back in 2018, I had seen a TMJ specialist, and Stanford referred me to their pain psychology. And the pain psychologist said, well, I think you have too much trauma to work on pain psychology, so you need to go work on the trauma. And
Okay.
then I went to a trauma specialist, and she was like, well, you haven't been close to a life or death situation or physically abused, so you don't have trauma.
Okay, well,
And
that's
that
very
really fucked
irresponsible.
me up. I
Yeah.
just, like, sorry to use that word, but that, like,
No, straight up.
I had never validated what I'd been through before. And then to hear that, I was like, well, yeah, everything was fine. Even the therapist told me everything was fine.
So, Katie, right there, what I would imagine translated to you is there's no place for me. Right? I'm too messed up for
Yes.
this, but I'm not messed up enough for this. The doctor can't help me. I mean, that's a real place of despair.
Yeah. And as I was looking through those notes and remembering that pain psychologist kind of consult, I saw that she had said that a lot of patients liked curable
Okay.
and Nicole
That
Sacks.
so
And
that
so
was your
then
door.
I found you. Yeah.
Okay.
Not through the migraine, but that was my door to you. And so I went to the curable app and I found you at kind of at the same time looking through all this. And I listened, and I think I listened to maybe Angela's story a few years ago, was one of the first
Right.
ones, because that's when I started listening.
I remember Angela. She had some serious trauma, right?
Yeah, she had
Yeah.
some trauma, and also, like, yeah, parts of that aligned with mine a lot. And I just immediately was like, oh my gosh, this is me. The belief came on so strongly, because all of my, like, I'm a scientist and I grew up in Western medicine. However, like, it doesn't all make sense and never all made sense to me how this pain could linger.
Yeah.
And I had remembered, like, when I was 16 going through this jaw surgery, the week before, my surgeon was like, well, you know, this won't fix your pain, right? And as a kid, I was like, then why are we, like, why are
That's
we
my
doing
exact
this?
story. That's my exact story. They're like, we'll do spinal fusion surgery, but there's really no guarantee at all that you'll be out of pain. And I'm like, it's the same exact thing. I was like, then what's the point?
Yeah. And so I did it. It was awful. My bones, like my jaw bones continue to degrade. Like you can't even tell I had a surgery to make my teeth align sort of thing. But lots of moments like that. And that one sticks out where it's just like, I could never understand what. And so for me, the messaging that the brain is so powerful and can send these signals made perfect sense. And the belief set in like very, very, very quickly for me once I listened to even just a few of your episodes.
Amazing.
Yeah. So that set in. And then I went to your virtual retreat when you had COVID a while back.
Yes.
Which was good. However, what my struggle was initially was it was really hard to feel anything. I was really hopeless. I was numb. And at that retreat, one thing that was so helpful was Lisa Schlossberg said, I was very stuck in, I need to do the perfect thing to get better at that point, right? Like we hear that a lot in your stories. And Lisa was like, it doesn't matter so much exactly what you're doing, but the energy by which you're doing it with.
Mm-hmm.
Like that sort of messaging of like, I had been through anxiety therapy forever. I'm doing all the right things, but I'm doing it white knuckled and with criticism and high urgency and high pressure and that whole thing. So that has been my biggest change since then over the last 2 years.
Let's pause and talk about that for a minute, because that's a really important thing to highlight. So what Lisa was describing is something that I often teach as there are two energies that we can do things with. One is love and one is fear. And although that might sound on its face sort of trite, you know, oh, love or fear, actually, it's everything. And, you know, one of the ways I explain it that I think is just the most easy to understand is if you are suffering, let's say, with back pain and you go to a therapeutic massage, there are two ways to walk into the same exact massage. The first is, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, this has to help me. This is the last thing I'm doing. It's so expensive. It better. This person comes really highly recommended. If this doesn't help me, I'm never going to get to that appointment, that meeting, that kids basketball game, you know, whatever. That's an energy of fear. And I can promise you that that massage will end up being a complete fail. And at the end of that massage, likely you will feel worse. Your muscles will be so tense. Whereas you could walk into the exact same massage through the lens of love and say, listen, I love myself. I am really struggling. I need some support. This person comes highly recommended. Let me just see what it's like to just let down my guard for 1 hour and let somebody help me and maybe be in it with somebody. And maybe at the very least, it'll feel good to have someone's hands on me. Like such a different energy, such a gentle energy. It's the same exact massage, completely different result. Because what we are trying to do, and Katie, as a scientist, you know this well, we're trying to regulate the nervous system. We're trying to move from a long-term state of chronic fight or flight that's causing so many signals of inflammation and muscle constriction and spasm to be sent from the brain into the body. We're trying to move from that dysregulation into a regulated rest and repair state where basically the body heals itself. You know, this is not a miracle. This is what the body is meant to do. It is meant to heal itself when it's in a state of safety. And so what Lisa was referencing there was that. And I think what was great is that you were able to identify in yourself, which is so important for everyone out there to think about. How am I moving through my life? How am I? How do I meet things? Do I meet things with openness and curiosity? Or do I meet things with a fists clenched, fear-based urgency? And it really, really matters. So what I'm hearing is that you are identifying a lot of areas in your life that you are meeting it with that fear lens.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And going into that virtual retreat, I had decided to take a leave of absence for my PhD program, which was a really, really big decision and hard, and just to show how like dark it was getting. And when we had open question time, and I mentioned this in our membership Q&A call, and I asked a question, I just cried. Like I couldn't, and I just asked about like, what do you do when showing up is so overwhelming?
Yeah.
And so what I took away from that was I kind of actually paused the journal speak for a little bit and just went into self-compassion and inner child and tenderness, I think was the word that I found those months was that I could find tenderness towards myself and
And
my
that's so
experience.
key. You know, I oftentimes hear people say that they're struggling with the journal speak because they put so much pressure on themselves. And it actually speaks to the topic you just brought up, which is the love versus fear lens. If indeed you are so bereft of patience and kindness for yourself, it does make sense to focus on that one and then wait to see when you're ready to do some other stuff. Like, there's no wrong way to do this if you're following your intuitive voice. And, you know, like the three legs of a stool, if you don't have all three, belief, do the work, and patience and kindness for yourself, the stool will fall over. And I think a lot of people are like solid in their belief and their workhorses, and they're going to do the work, and then they're shitting on themselves all the time. And it really doesn't work. So I love that you paused and had the intuition to know that probably it had been a lifetime of you not feeling that tenderness, and that you had to, and I love that you say it, because I think people can see it as like superfluous, like, oh, right. Yeah, sure. Be nice to myself. But actually it's a big deal.
Yeah. I saw it that way before too. Right. It's what so much of that is overly quoted, and I had never felt it. And something about, Lisa. And then I finally got in with some therapists that summer. After that, like, really validated the trauma I had been through and taught me the power of self-validation around that too.
Amazing.
And so leading up to when your virtual membership community started, kind of in those 8 months, I worked through a lot of the trauma, a lot on self-compassion, a lot on self-validation and acceptance, and started to see, my pain didn't shift right away, but just I felt moments of peace sometimes.
Wow.
And that was like crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe that sounds silly, but like,
oh, I'm sure a lot of people listening will relate to that. Just the concept of moments of peace sometimes is huge.
Yeah. And so when you announced your membership one, I was so excited, because at that point I was like, okay, I think I can journal speak now.
Yes.
Right. Like, I've done a lot of the like sitting with myself, not that like I didn't do any work, but it was a little bit different than shifting through the trauma. And it was still maybe a different form of journal speak, right? But the true, like, I'm going to write through these personality traits and that sort of things was only happening through the lens of self-criticism.
Yes.
Before.
That's like the law of diminishing returns. It's very hard to do it that way. Yeah.
And so with your membership community, and I still have had like really, really great therapists around me. That have been really helpful. I have one that is an OCD therapist, but also trauma informed. And that was kind of a good approach I needed, because before they would just stick me with anxiety and OCD and let's do exposures. And I'm like, I'm doing them. I'm doing them. What now? Right. Which now I understand is so much like, just the tenderness towards myself, and and outcome independence has been huge too. As you,
So,
like, you can probably hear the high pressure and urgency with my story in that year. So
yes. And
also,
outcome, and I want to just take a moment to define
please.
It just in case people aren't aware. Outcome independence is so important, because what we are as a society is we are a cause and effect society. We want to see the reward for what we do. So we do things with the reward in mind. And so we'll act on something knowing that what, you know, we're going to decide in advance what we're going to get for doing that thing. And then we're going to expect it, and we're going to need it in order to feel like the effort was worth it. And it's so hard to move into outcome independence, but it is the exact self that the nervous system needs. And essentially all that is you do what you need to do. You determine the next right considered action for yourself. You do it gently and with love and kindness for yourself. And then you say, however this goes, it's okay for me. I don't need it to work. If it, quote, works, or if I see a shift, wonderful. I will celebrate that. I'll love that. If it doesn't, it means that my trauma right now is not ready to unclench. You know, it's here for a purpose. It thinks it's keeping me safe by keeping me smaller, maybe in a little bit of pain, maybe anxious. Okay, well, that's today. It will shift if I keep showing up for it. It is just a much gentler way to meet life. And it, first of all, it works across platforms. I mean, anywhere you use this kind of energy, it will improve your experience. But in the world of recovery from chronic pain, it is essential. And so I love that that was part of the recipe for you.
Yeah, and Part of that in what you were saying reminded me that I was stuck on what is the next right considered action for so long, right? And then I think with that retreat and the summer around there, I was like, well, it doesn't matter too much. Like a kind of outcome independence, but also that same mindset towards what the right action is also.
Because you know what? Listen, for a person who has had so much trauma around boundaries, i.e., Badger, and all the things that happened to you, it really does make it difficult to trust yourself. And even though that was 1 billion percent not your fault, nor should you have acted any differently, just the confluence of events and the way things happen makes it makes it hard to trust your intuition or to say that, oh, I know what the next right thing. And so I love that you just said, I don't know, whatever. It doesn't really matter. I'm going to be kind to myself. I'm going to listen to the experts that are guiding me, and we'll see what happens. And that is an energy that really moves toward healing.
Yeah. So now I think through the story we're at today, right? And
Okay.
I've been in your membership community. This whole year has been the biggest shifts of not just pain, but like my life. But pain is the littlest, biggest thing, as or
Yes.
little by slowly. All of those things you say are, oh my gosh, real. I am setting boundaries. I'm more comfortable sitting in discomfort. When I was around my family like 3 months ago, I almost felt bored with all the patterns that were happening, and in a
Love
way that felt
it.
like healthy bored. I don't
Yes.
know. And I, the depression has lifted too. Like I
Amazing.
just feel my love for life and learning and being outside coming back. I
Yes.
still have 7 to 10 migraines a month. They don't always bring me to bed anymore, which is
Okay.
great. And on several days, I just have a headache. Right.
Right.
So I'm at this point where I have more energy. I can move through my pain and say, like, hey, I see you, and I'm going to do this. And I am just feeling more at home in myself than I ever have, which is really cool. And I'm just really, I still have the pain, and I'm grateful that it's brought me here, 'cause I didn't know this was something you could have in life, was like feeling
Amazing.
it
Tell
kind of, right?
us, Katie, the story that you shared that I loved on the community about the hike you took recently, and that you were on your way up, and I think a migraine tapped you on the shoulder and said, "Do you need me right now?" and how that went for you.
I was able to do a hike at Yosemite National Park in high altitudes, with my kind of some of my closest friends and family, like people in my life. And the year before, I couldn't join them on these day hikes, right? And before then, and I was able to pace myself and go slowly and get to the top. And I was in a slower group behind them, but I was so happy to still be out and about. And all of a sudden, whatever tipped my cup over doesn't matter so much, but the migraine was there, and I pushed to the top through pain. The last mile was really, really horrible. But once I got up there, I was like, I need a half hour to them, and I'll be okay to go. I said, I like with confidence, I was like, I just
Right.
need 30 minutes. One of the things with this is my partner, we're still together, is now like he's worried about the pain too, or if I announce it to
I'm
others. But
sorry.
I
Yeah.
so and yeah, I don't know if we talked about this today or not, but so I went with confidence then. I was like, I am not okay right now, and I will be in 30 minutes. And I went and put my earbuds in and just like sat with myself and said, hi, migraine, I see you, and I really value this time with my close friends, and you can hang out and you can stay here. And I'll give you 20 minutes right now, and we'll sit and rest, and then we walk. And I was able to finish the hike.
Amazing, amazing. And this is what it's all about. This is, it's not about snapping your fingers and having your life be perfect, because the point of the pain is that it wakes us up to things that we had not known were important to think about. You know, we spend our lives, you know, head down, getting through it, one thing to the next, and we're missing so much. I mean, there is presence in the moment that is missed because we are just getting through the day. And this process of being in chronic pain really wakes us up. But then, of course, It's about living awake, which is really freaking challenging, which is, I'm sure, a good segue into what we're about to talk about next. But I love the fact that you could say, I am okay, because that's all the nervous system needs. It still might be tapping on your shoulder with the pain as you move through this recovery process, but for you to have the confidence to be like, I got you. I'm in pain right now. I will be okay. And then for you to be able to have the confidence to tell your partner or your loved ones, because you're right, they do. They worry about us. And then we take on that worry because it's a codependent behavior, which God knows if you were raised with alcoholism, it goes right into the rubric of the way you live, because children of alcoholics, and I am one of them, tend to be incredibly codependent and always vigilant with their antennas up, seeing where they have to fix something. Right. Mm-hmm. So that it's a major one. Okay. So now thank you for beautifully sharing and detailing your story. It really, really helps me, even though I knew you and I knew a lot of these things, it really puts it all together in one place. So as we move into the real-time heal segment of this talk, what is it that you feel is sort of in your way? What can we talk about that might open some doors for you in moving your healing forward?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we had brought up, that I had brought up a few weeks ago in the Q&A in our membership community, was really struggling. Now that I have energy, I can feel the pull to go back to old ways of self-care. So, and or lack of self-care.
Yes.
Right. So I can see, oh, here is my love of learning. I love school and learning and teaching and mentoring. And I can just see the path to go back to filling all of my voids with that, right? And part of it would be out of the value of, I love school and working and that sort of thing, but I have a big fear. I'm really struggling to trust myself to go back into it. And I think that's one of the reasons the pain is still around.
It's a great point. It is a great point. And one you brought up that I really think needs to be addressed. And in terms of helping you, I'm actually sort of surprised at the route we're going to go. But, you know, I always tell people when we do real time heals, like I am here. My mind is just completely present and here as your therapist. So the first thing I want to ask you is, how old was Badger when she died?
11.
Okay. 11. Blue is 10. And so it's young. It's still young for a dog like that. Yeah. I mean, it's not super young, but they could live until 14, 15.
Yeah.
The second question I have is, are you able to say today with confidence that her death was not your fault? And there's no right answer here. I want you to really open yourself to curiosity.
Yes. Yes. I know her death was not my fault.
Okay. Do you know, and I'm going to take a little spiritual tint here, and maybe it's because I needed to do it for myself, that she had lived the year she was supposed to live, and that this was something that you could not have prevented and it was not your role to prevent?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Beautiful. Beautiful. And the reason I'm going through this door is I really think that if we want to learn to trust ourselves, the most important thing to do is to unearth and air the barriers that can stand between us and trusting ourselves. And if there were parts of that where you still were holding on to, maybe I should have, maybe I could have, maybe I was meant to have, that's a real barrier because it haunts us. It haunts us. And I know that feeling so well. And I will tell you that when I had to put Blue down, I think the fact that I had done the work that I'm glad to hear that you have done kept me from having that terrible ache, because he had cancer, but he was still a happy guy, but his cancer was bad and very aggressive. And it was like the choice between doing it now and allowing him to have like a really great, peaceful ending, or allowing him to get really sick and have it be traumatizing for the whole family. And I made the decision to go with option A. And had I not done the work around knowing that I am not God, I am not the person who is supposed to fight and manipulate all things in the world. I am here to accept that which has been offered to me. I think that that was really pivotal in me finding peace around that process. And I just know how it feels. I know very deeply how it can feel. And so now that I've gotten that information, I want to ask you to kind of go more deeply into, are there other places in your life that you feel you struggle to know whether or not to trust the intuitive voice that presents itself when you have to make a decision?
Yes, a lot.
Okay, tell me about some of those spaces.
Well, the one that urged the question is just reintegrating back with work. Another one is, I think, knowing that I can set and have set the boundaries right now with my family, but trusting that like that will continue in the future, or knowing where to take that is definitely something that is a struggle. Not just within myself, but also in like with my partner and stuff too, right? Of
I'm hearing something that I'm not sure I'm going to conflate with not trusting yourself. I think what I'm hearing, and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong, that you don't like how it feels, but it's not necessarily like you can't trust yourself to do it because you're doing it. You are setting the boundaries. And you are currently at least knowing where the line is for work, but you don't like, it feels icky. It feels off. It feels like unpleasant and uncomfortable, but you are doing it. Would that be correct?
With my family, yeah. With work, I am struggling to focus. And I feel like I sit down to work on my cancer thesis and I'm scared that if I let go of control, that I'm not going to come back.
Right. So what would letting go of control look like?
Well, it doesn't feel like something I can do. Because I'm struggling to focus at all right now, because I'm so stuck in thoughts that are saying, I can't do this, or if I do this, all I will do is work and school again. Or there's like, I think that it's kind of conflating it with alcoholism, and I'm feeling like I can't have this medium. Like my brain is very much so that only extremes exist in a lot of these places.
Okay.
And I think a fear there is like, I don't want to be like them.
Okay. So it's the all or nothing mentality.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's like, if I dip my foot in, I'm going to be sucked down to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you brought up that the one big thing you got out of the virtual retreat was the concept of the energy with which we do something, because this is where we're going to find the answer to this.
Yeah.
So essentially, here's what I am hearing. I am hearing that you have a grand task at hand, which is completing a PhD on a heavy topic like cancer, and that it's almost like if I begin, I'm going to drown in it. And and that can only be right-sized through seeing it as outcome independent and has however this goes, it's okay for me. So instead of putting so much pressure on yourself, and this also taps into perfectionism, which I'm sure is a bedfellow for you, instead of looking at the task, and I'm so exactly where you are because I'm writing a book and it is like the exact same feeling. Like it's so huge. It feels so important. And when I let myself get in that space of it's so huge and it feels so important, I have access to nothing. I'm literally like a shutdown person.
Yeah.
And then when I say, all right, just do a shitty job today, then fine. Like I have to even just like go all the way to the end of the line, even though we both know, you know about yourself and I know about myself, was we're not going to do a shitty job. But what I say is just do anything. And one of the things that Lisa has suggested that's still so hard for me, but I've been doing it, is that don't even put fingers to keyboard. She's like, start by dictating it. She's like, just open your notes app and put on your microphone and talk into your phone about what this chapter is going to be. And I actually did that the other day. And even though it was so imperfect, and it gives me the heebie-jeebies for something to be so imperfect, I then put that onto a page and I was able to really start to edit and bring it out. But really, that aside, it's about saying, I'm going to do a certain portion of my work today, and I'm going to do it however it comes out. And at the end of the day, although it might not meet my old standards were killing me slowly. So if life is a choice between what hurts and what hurts worse, I can't actually hold myself to those standards anymore, because picking up those standards is picking up my pain, picking up my OCD, my anxiety, and many other things that no, thank you. I am not living that way anymore. And so in doing that, in being a little gentler, then you say, so however it goes, it's okay for me. I'm not going to do nothing, because that's also not okay for me. I am going to use this newfound energy that is fueling my healing by saying, I'm going to work for 2 hours today on this. And whatever comes of it will be what comes of it. And if I feel like making a judgment on that later on, so be it. I'm going to get something done. And see, what happens here is you're building a relationship of trust between you and yourself, because there are two things that happen when you have that kind of energy. The first is, you know, you're not going to forsake yourself. You're going to show up and do something. You're not going to allow yourself to be sucked sideways by this lack of focus or this need for perfectionism. I'm really speaking to myself right when I'm speaking to you. You're going to show up and you're going to do something. And then you're going to learn to trust yourself that not only are you not going to abuse yourself, you're not going to give up. And you're going to find that middle place of equanimity, which very similar to your being, quote, usefully bored in your family interactions.
Yeah.
Like it's gently bored. It's not bored like you're sleeping and you wish you weren't there. It's like, there's no drama. There's no reason to get all inflamed about this. Here they are playing their roles impeccably. They're these people that have always been who they are, and look at them showing up as they are, just like, look at me showing up as I am. Here we are. Nice to meet you, Katie. You sit down at the computer and you feel like a crush of pressure and self-loathing and self-doubt. Here we are. Oh, welcome. I've been expecting you. Have a seat. We're just going to do what we can do today. And little bites like that remind me of the energy with which you said, I'm just going to hold myself gently for these few months before I delve into the hard work of journal speak.
Yeah.
How that prepared you so beautifully for the work you're doing now in the membership community and for yourself. So how does that sound as a bit of an energy shift?
I feel the self-critic in me being like, well, obviously, like, right?
Say more about that. I'm so there
logically.
So you're saying you're there logically, intellectually, you can hear it, and the energy. Yes. And so what's the other energy saying?
The other energy is like, but why do I have to?
Okay.
Like, I am so tired.
Right. So
is it, like, so I just want you to save me. Right? Like that sort of, or not you, but anyone.
I get that so hard. Okay, so that is fodder for journal speak. So what you do is you go onto your journal speak practice, you open a document, like all the same journal speak practice, to put it on 20 minutes, you hide the timer, and you so gently say, the way you would say to a little kid, do you want to give up? You can if you want. Do you want to give up? And I think we both know that when you start that dialogue, what's going to happen is that little kid might pause, but she's going to be like, no, I actually don't want to give up. Okay, honey, you don't want to give up? That's fine. Then we can be as gentle as you want to be, but we're going to do this now. We're going to do it as slowly as you need. Like, you just need scaffolding around that energy inside of you that says, I can't do this anymore. Does anyone see me? Does anyone notice me here struggling? No, actually, you don't, because you guys never let me talk about it. And I never let myself show that weakness in school because it was my only place of peace. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not heard there, and I'm not heard here, and I'm screaming inside and nobody hears me. And that's why I have to scream through symptoms, because nobody's freaking listening. So that kid needs you to turn toward her and say, I am right here and we're going to do whatever you want to do. You want to fully give up? Let's quit the PhD program. How about that? Right? Let's break up with our relationship. Let's quit the PhD program. Let's go live on an island in the Caribbean. We've saved enough money to last a couple months there. And she'll like sit there for a moment. And like, sometimes she needs that.
Yeah.
She needs to know, like, it's okay. And I can't tell you how many times in parenting, because parenting is kind of, unfortunately, you know, a lifelong obligation. I have sat with the struggle and the stress of having children and said, I'm done. I'm not doing it anymore. Actually, I quit. And you guys, I'm sure, will be fine. I'm leaving. And like in my journal speak, obviously, and allowing that energy to just be heard. That like, I can't do this anymore. I've done enough. It's all about that. And this is where we're constantly talking about in our community, but wearing it loosely, finding a way toward that loose relationship with ourselves, because we're so used to such a strict, rigid garment. And it's about creating that looseness for ourselves.
Yeah, I think that inner child Katie is the one that doesn't trust me, or like that voice in particular too, of like, well, you're just gonna get wrapped up in this again, hear me.
Yes.
And like the tantrum needs to be heard. And I a lot of my journal speak right now is around listening to her, and she hates me.
Okay, so she hates you. Just replace your indignation, I'm sure, or fear, or insult with curiosity around that, because she doesn't really hate you. She's so depleted. She's so over it. She feels so abandoned by you.
Yeah.
And I went through this very seriously when I first started inner child work, because I am such a lone wolf and I was raised to be completely independent. And I felt so fueled by that. And then so resentful of that, and being able to hold both of those things in one space and let the inner child kick and kick until she's kicked out and be like, I haven't left. I'm right here. I know I left you back then because there was no other way. What she's going to do is she's going to start understanding why you left. That's what happens when you build a relationship with the inner child. It's not just talking to her and listening. It's a depth. It's like any relationship where you're going to start hearing from her. I get it. I wouldn't have paid attention to me either in that house, or I wouldn't have shown weakness in school either. I mean, how could we? That would be death, because that was the only place we shined, you know, and allowing that to be a deepened relationship. So one thing I want to say, Katie, as we wrap this up, I heard a frustration in your voice a few minutes ago, which is like, I know this, like, I know it, I just have to do it now, you know, or why am I not doing it if I know it? And what I want you to know is everything is a process. And unfortunately or fortunately, sometimes it's so gentle that we don't even see the progress until further down the line when we look back. Like Lisa and I always talk about ascension, that this journey is concentric circles up a mountain. Sometimes you don't see the progress till you're two rungs up and you're like, oh, wait a second. I'm actually not in the same space as I was last time I experienced this trigger. And so when you feel that frustration of like, I know what it is, why am I not doing it? I want you to be reminded through my voice and through your own, you're doing it. You're doing it. It matters. Like, you are moving toward a space similar to the experience with your dog, where one day you will be able to earnestly look at yourself in the mirror the way you looked at me and say, no, I don't think it's my fault anymore. And that's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge.
It's huge.
Yeah.
I think part of me is also feeling it feels unfair that I have to do all this work, and I just want to be taken care of.
Yes.
Like, I'm sick of taking care of myself.
It is such a common theme. Oh my goodness. I can't tell you how often I felt it myself, how often I've heard it in our communities, just like allowing yourself to have that self-pity, allowing yourself to have that anger at the injustice. And the only thing I can say to you, honey, that you must know, and it's interesting, I always find this every one of these sessions, has a theme, we can go right back to the beginning, which is don't compare your insides to other people's outsides. Everybody is fighting such a fight. You know, like, I get why you say it's unfair. Why should I have to do this? I think if we were to pluck 100 people off the street, every one of them would find mm-hmm. that space. Well, why do I have to do this?
Yeah.
You know, nobody even knows because I don't show it about, you know, my abusive upbringing or my mm-hmm. ailing parents or my, you know, terrible relationship with my spouse or my kid, like, or my terrible relationship with myself that blocks me from everything, or I've never found a partner, you know, on and on and on. And so it's so important. And this is a lot of Kristen Neff's work too.
Yeah.
When it comes to self-compassion, part of the self-compassion break is this is a moment of suffering and everybody suffers. You know, it's so yeah. easy and reflexive to be like, I'm alone. I'm unique. I'm alone. And it's worse for me. And so to just pause and open in the shared humanity of that.
Yeah. Okay.
And also not shut it down. I want all that kicky, screamy energy to have a space in your journal speak. Even though you're a member of society, you still get every minute of your voice because you didn't have it for a long time.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. So before we close, is there any other like other unrelated question that you kind of wanted to bring up?
How do you handle overwhelm?
How I handle overwhelm is it's going to be a similar answer. It's like that. Mm-hmm. It's like that old cliche. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at mm-hmm. a time. Although, you know, I yeah. hate that one. It's just true.
yeah.
How I handle overwhelm. And like I said, I'm speaking from a very personal place is mm-hmm. I decide I don't have to be perfect, but I also decide I'm not allowed to skip whatever it is I think yeah. I need to do. And I just do a little bit. And then I let that little bit be enough because I have faith as I ascend my different mountains that it will build up to be a final product eventually. And I think the challenge for you and for me, since we're similar, is it's counterintuitive. You want yeah. to put the pressure on yourself. It feels like a safer space, right?
Yeah. I get stuck a lot because the pain will come on and then I'm almost like, oh, well, I need to be tender and take care of myself now in a way okay. where it, like, but then it's like, I'm sometimes using that to skip, I think. Right. And so I get stuck in like, what do I trust? Right. Like, do I take care of this migraine or do I push through this one or this? Right. And I know ultimately it doesn't matter.
Well, no, it does and it doesn't. I want to change the language. Okay. So I want to change push through.
Yeah.
I want to change push through to sit with. So yeah. instead of feeling like you're pushing through the migraine, when it comes and you feel like you still have it in you to continue with whatever task you're doing, I want you to say, I'm making space. I'm moving aside on the kindergarten carpet. Sit. You're going to accompany me through this one. I'm not pushing through you. I'm allowing you to join us. And when it is too loud, like it would be, like sometimes a kindergartner sits next to you and sometimes a kindergartner sits next to you and is throwing mm-hmm. a tantrum, you can say, I see what's happening. Today you're very loud. And so you're helping me understand today's a day where we're going to pause and take care of you.
Yeah.
But there are other days where you just bring her along and you're like, you know, you're it's more responsibility yeah. than you'd like to have a kindergartner while you're writing yeah. a dissertation, but it is, but it's manageable.
Yeah.
All right. Katie, my love, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing yourself so graciously today.
Of course. Thank you, Nicole. This has been a dream. I'm so grateful for you. And I've listened to all of them. And just to be another small part of this is really important to me. And I think the other reason that I can't focus on all of this is because I just want to do stuff in space because it's so, so life-changing.
Amazing. Amazing. All right. Well, honey, it's been a pleasure. I look forward to seeing you on our Zoom in a couple weeks
Absolutely.
For the membership community. And for all of you guys out there, if you are enjoying the podcast, do me the huge favor of jumping over to iTunes to rate and review it. It helps people like Katie find the podcast, which is so important. And until next week, this has been the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs, and I'll see you then. Bye-bye.